First of all, of course, I want to thank all of the members of the International Gender Studies Center, and especially Paola, my tutor, my dear tutor, Maria, Phyllis, who helped me a lot as well, personally and professionally, and all of the members, Judith as well. She was helping me with the article, and well, I'm so happy about being here. Thank you so much. Well, at the beginning, when Paola started, or when presenting Paola, Maria said that we don't have a lot of connections, that our presentations are quite different. But actually, I noticed after hearing Paola that we have a lot of connections, actually, because we are talking about vulnerability. In the case of Paola, it was women, but in my case, it's intersex people that I'm going to explain soon. But it is very connected to, intersex issues are very connected to newborns. And newborns, to me, are the most vulnerable human being ever, because they can't have any autonomy, they don't have any power of decision. So, and I'm going to talk about violations of human rights as well, and different narratives. So this is a Spanish cover of my dissertation, which is called El Cuerpo Extra Fines. El cuerpo means the body, and extra means beyond, out. Fines, it's in Latin, limits, borders, frontiers. So I'm speaking about a body outside its frontiers, outside its limits. In my thesis, what I do is to explore different narratives that comes from different disciplines, like biomedicine, law, academic, social discourses, and I approach them critically in the way they normalize sex and gender. Society, Occidental society, this is important because intersex issues, there are different ways of approaching intersex issues, and it's not the same talking about Occidental society than, for instance, how it's in India or how it's in Thailand, which is quite different. But it's important to mention it because I haven't explored that. I've been reading that, but I focus specifically on Occidental world. So in Occidental world, we tend to see society or differences in a binomial way. And not to talk about gender and sexuality. We always talk about male or female. In the academic production, there is a considerable analytic partiality, because we always can read, or people state in general, that there is only two categories for sex and gender, male and female, and they are fixed and changeable and legitimized, actually. But the truth is really different. So the purpose of my research is to give an account of these diverse discourses that focus on the demands of the intersex people. When I'm talking about intersex people, it's people who are born with an anatomical sex that doesn't correspond with the social historical construction of sex and gender. That, as I said, male and female. And there is a wide range of intersex. In medical terms, it's intersex conditions. In activist terms, would be intersex states. That I would prefer the second one. But in general, in medical literature, whenever you read about intersex types, you read the word conditions as well. So I give account of different and diverse discourses that give account of how different norms are shaping our bodies, and how society shapes our bodies, and how our bodies can shape society as well. So I'm going to start with the first question that none of us could escape from this question, and it's, is it a boy or a girl? So this question means that we all have a scar. It's not only intersex people. One day in Barcelona, I met Mauro Cabral, who is an intersex activist from Argentina. And my director of thesis, she arranged a meeting with him, and he told me to go on a Sunday morning to have breakfast with him. So when I sit on the table, I explained that I was researching on intersex issues. And he said to me, well, first he covered his face when I said that I was researching on intersex issues. And he said to me, why don't you study yourself instead of calling me to tell me that you are researching intersex issues? But then he calmed down because I tried to explain that I was really interested and I was working in human rights and in gender and sexuality as well. And finally he said, he gave me one suggestion that was, okay, if you want to understand what is it intersex or to understand intersex issues, first you have to start questioning your own values, the things that you take for granted. What do you need to be a man? What do you need to be a woman? What happens if you don't feel like a woman or like a man? And who is imposing you this? Because actually, in general, people doesn't think about it. Like, other people are deciding for us if we are going to be male or females, since we are born. So when a newborn is intersex, in the past time, in the medical protocols, they said it was a crisis. Nowadays, if you read, they call it a social emergency. There is an activist called Ian Morland, which he's from Cardiff University, and he said one time, like, how can be possible that a social emergency can be cured on the theater of operations? And why it has to be a baby the victim? Because the baby is the only one who can't decide at all. Or the doctors, one of the main affirmations that the doctor say when the parents go to consult what to do when there is an intersex baby is the baby can't be left like that. And the reason they state is that the baby, when he grows up, will be bullied and will be marginalized. But what they don't take into account is the consequences of the surgical interventions. Because the surgical interventions are cosmetical. They don't have any relation with health reasons, health problems, or life risks. There are two types of intersexuality that could require a surgical intervention. But in general, they perform, when there is an ambiguous genitalia, they perform these interventions. So in the activism world, they call it genital mutilation, actually. It's the Occidental way of genital mutilation. So the autonomy, it's a concept that it's been quite used by intersex activists. And the issue here is, like, how can we talk about autonomy? Like, how can a baby decide for his own body if he can do it, really? So somebody has to decide for him. But does somebody have to decide for him, or is better to wait in order the baby can grow up and decide for himself what he wants to do, if male or female, of intersex or any category he wishes? The problem is, nowadays, 1 out of 2,000, well, I don't believe really in statistics, but I have to bring them out because it's in the academic production. There is one book specifically from Anne Fausto-Sterling, which is called Sex in the Body. She's a biologist and a feminist writer, and she spread these numbers that 1 out of 2,000 babies are born intersex. But the truth is, there are a lot of clinical histories that are hidden because the doctor, they don't want the parents to put them on court, because when the babies realize there is something wrong, in general the parents go against the doctors or against the hospitals when there wasn't an informed consent. And this happens really often. Actually, in Chile now there are 2 cases that are on court because they never told neither the parents and, of course, not the baby. So the autonomy issue, it's one of the most important claims of the intersex community. So all humans have the right to autonomy over their own bodies, including their genitals. The paradigm, the medical paradigm to real to do a surgical intervention is like the woman has to be able to be penetrated and the man has to be able to penetrate. This is an absolutely patriarchal and heterosexist way of approaching this issue, because they actually take this into account. If you see the results or the conclusions of different in articles in biomedicine journals, you just can't believe like what are the measures that they take to see if a baby has to be intervened or not. And the intervention has really, really grave and bizarre consequences. Most of the times they perform female. They change the intersex baby into a female body. They do a vaginoplasty. And that implies that during many years, they had to put like a dildo inside the baby so the vagina doesn't close, because actually it's like a scar. So we can talk about bullying or marginalizing, because after a surgical intervention, the baby, apart from being bullied and marginalized, they are in terrible pain and trauma as well, because they actually feel like being raped. I haven't mentioned, but for the last 4 years I'm working, actually, in the International Intersex Organization. What I do basically is translate all of the documents or news or papers that comes from mostly from the US for the Spanish-speaking world. So I create a webpage, and so the people of Spanish speakers, they can get the news and can be informed about it. Have you heard about this case, David Raymer case?
Yes.
Okay, before I start with this, I wanted to read. I was lucky, before coming here, I had a workshop with Judith Butler in Barcelona. It was only 1 week, but I asked her about this question of autonomy, like how can we claim for autonomy, how can we talk about autonomy if it's a baby? So she said to me, when members of an intersex community claim autonomy, they do it to the medical establishment, to legal institutions, religious institutions. That means that in order to ask for autonomy, they must ratify the social and political institutions to guarantee this autonomy. From the moment we claim autonomy, implicitly we are saying that we are dependent of all that institutions which hurt us of help or help us. When we claim autonomy, we are recognizing the other as part of oneself. The claim of autonomy has nothing to do with individualism. This was the Adriana Caballero way of approaching autonomy, because she thought we can talk about autonomy because it's very individualistic. But Judith Butler says it has nothing to do with individualism, because intersex community, for instance, they act as a group, as a community, even if within the intersex community there are wide differences. Okay. The case of David Raymer, it put a before and after in the gender history. Because in general, in academic production or medical production, they were stating that gender is something that it comes actually for adjusting oneself to biology. I mean, if it's a baby who has a penis, then it's male, and then he has to behave as a male. But in this case, there was twin brothers that went to have a circumcision. Her parents took them to have a circumcision, and when they were performing it, they burnt off the penis of one of them. So the mother didn't know what to do, and she consulted John Money. That was in 1966. So Dr. John Money, the picture is there, he's from John Hopkins University, suggested that they should perform a surgical intervention and convert Bruce into Brenda. So it was a question of nurture versus nature. And of course the mother didn't know what to do, because actually she said, there are many documentaries about this case, actually she said that the easiest way for her to solve this problem would be to nurture Bruce as a girl. So they did this operation, but it results bad, really bad, because Brenda was never Brenda, actually. And he was playing with his brother, toys. He didn't want to dress like a girl. And then when she was 14 years old, she started asking a lot of questions. So, and the mother had to tell her the truth. And since then, she decided that she wanted his penis back. And that implies a really long and traumatic, again, surgical intervention. And, well, this became even worse. He could get married, he adopted 3 children, but then in 2005 he committed suicide. He had tried this before when he was a teenager. So the experiment for Dr. John Money was perfect, because his radical theory was like, gender, it has nothing to do with biology, but it can be created from zero, like a tabula rasa. And of course, it didn't result. So if you ask me what I think about gender, you have to take into account multiple factors. You can't be only thinking about biology or only culture or context. Like, everything is totally linked together. Well, here I'm going to... This is, as I told you before, this is one of the papers that I was analyzing in my thesis that shows the results of a vaginal replacement in the pediatric age group, a 34-year experience of intestinal vaginoplasty in children and young girls. The results, they say they were excellent. 18 of them are sexually active, but they don't say if they have any pleasure of sensibility or orgasmic capacity. And 4 are married. So again, we come back to the heterosexist way of approaching this issue. Like, the fact that they are married is considered like a successful issue for an intervention. So one patient with adrenogenital syndrome died of endocrine problems. Additional complications in 17 cases. Still, they consider it excellent. One patient had necrosis of the replaced vagina. Now she's waiting for a second operation. One patient had an abdominal abscess, which was surgically treated. 12 patients required a second procedure. 6 had stenotic new vaginal intrigues. 4, this is when the vagina closes. 4 had new vaginal prolapse, and 2 had intestinal obstruction. Conclusions. We believe that, well, this is not important, that the preferable technique for vaginal replacement is the use of intestinal conduit, blah, blah, blah. But they never take into account all the real bad things that happens to the people. There are a few studies that takes into account the experience of intersex adults that have been surgically intervened, but cosmetically surgically intervened. And I say cosmetic because it doesn't have any relation with health problems. And law, I'm going to talk about one specific document, which is called the Principles of Yogyakarta. A group of not only intersex, but experts on sex and gender from around the world, they met in Yogyakarta, and they did this document to protect the human rights in relation with sexual orientation and gender identity. And in the point 18, it talks about intersex intervention that should be protected by law. The problem is this document doesn't have the power of law, but many countries are using it like an example when they are creating new laws. And a good news is yesterday in Argentina we had approved the identity gender law, which protects not only, gives the right not only to transsexual people to have the identity state in the document as they wish, but as well, it could be, with this law, it will be really easy to put doctors on court if they perform surgical interventions without any consent. Academy here, there is a book of the International Gender Studies Centers, The Changing Sex and Bending Gender. So there has been a lot of academy production on intersex issues. As I said, my favorite and the one that really helped me on my dissertation is Sex in the Body from Anne Fausto Sterling. So anyone who wants to start or who wants to know a bit more about intersex issues or body and sexuality in general, this is really highly recommendable. Of course, all of the Judith Butler's production, even the latest work, because now she's working on Israeli and Palestinian issues, but she talks a lot about vulnerability, violence, and ethics issues. And Ian Morland, he's from here, well, not from Oxford, but from Cardiff University, and he's intersex and an intersex activist and an academy. So he has published a lot of papers in international journals as well, and you can find most of them on the internet for free. In an interview that I had with Curtis Hinkle, which is the founder of the International Intersex Organization, this was last week, he told me that, because I asked what the intersex community needs from academy, and what he says is that he would like academy to focus on deconstructing the binomial system of sex and gender, because most of the production was only like to ask him to stop cosmetic genital mutilation. But he thinks if we don't change the paradigm of the binomial system of sex and gender, it will be really difficult to stop this kind of mutilations. These are three novels that I analyze in one of the chapters of my thesis. One is called Annabelle. It's a Canadian novel from Kathleen Winter. The other is Esclava de Nadie, which means slave of nobody, from Agustín Sánchez Vidal, and Middlesex, which is a very famous Pulitzer Prize novel, and amazing as well. Esclava de Nadie is based in real documents from the Inquisition in Spain, and the writer fictionate the story of Eleno de Céspedes. So in this chapter, what I do is I take all of the passages of the novels that talk how the intersex characters resist the binomial system of sex and gender, which strategies they take to resist this system. And it is absolutely connected with Foucauldian theories of resistance, knowledge, and power. This is what I've been doing with Paula during this term. I am still writing the article. Well, it's almost written. Paula will tell. Maybe. I need to make more interviews. But I analyze basically different intersex organizations that have a web page, and I was based in two categories, their mission and their demands. So what I wanted to see is if the intersex community is homogeneous or it has a lot of difference among their visions. And I found, of course, it's quite different. It's not homogeneous at all. And one of the main reasons is that a big part of the intersex community, they believe in the term disorders of sexual development. So for them, it's really easier to get access to medical treatment if they say they have a condition, a medical condition. But if a person who defines himself or herself, or there is no term to say, but like intersex and absolutely healthy, they will probably not have any funding to access treatment or, I don't know, changing sex or whatever they need. So there is a big dispute on whether to name intersex or disorders of sex development. I don't like the idea of disorders of sex development at all. But of course, the people have their own right to decide by themselves. This year was the first forum of intersex organizing, and they agree three priorities. One is to put an end to mutilating and normalizing practices such as genital surgeries, psychological and other medical treatments, including infanticide and selective abortion on the grounds of intersex in some parts of the world. This is now, as technologies is evolucionando, evolving, there is screening techniques, and you can predict when a baby is going to be intersex or not, and the parents could decide to do an abortion. And intersex activists, that they say that this is a way of erasing intersex, actually. And yes, maybe they are going to stop genital mutilation, but that's the way to stop it, just to erasing them from the humanity. So, to ensure that personal, free, prior, and fully informed consent of the intersex individual is compulsory requirement in all medical practices and protocols. This is related with when the doctors, they don't tell, nor the parents, or the baby, that, well, the baby not, but the children, that they need to, they are intersex, actually. Because there are many cases in which people realize they are intersex when they are adolescents, teenagers, or even adults. When they are infertile, they go to do some tests, and then a man could realize that he has ovotestis inside. So it's not only a newborn's issue. It can happen. You could realize you are intersex while adult as well. And the third one is creating and facilitating supportive, safe, and celebratory environments for intersex peoples, their families, and surroundings. One of the claims that intersex community do as well is like whenever somebody is researching on intersex, they use a lot of testimonies, as if testimonies were the only thing they could do. There are a lot of artists, intersex artists, there are, I don't know, historians, philosophers, and they combine their activism with their production. And in England we have De La Grasse Volcano. He's in London and he's a very famous photographer. I don't have here any pictures of him, but if you look on internet, Del La Grasse Volcano, you will find, and it's quite amazing. He plays with bending gender in his pictures. I'm going to read shortly what Mauro said to me of his own story. As a teenager, I looked like a girl, but I did not menstruate. So my family brought me to the doctor. I had ovotested. I had a first surgery to remove them. Later on, I had a second surgery as a consequence of the first one, and then a very long treatment as a consequence of these two surgeries. I have so many scars, lack of sensibility in the skin between my belly button and my pubis, and immense tiredness. The treatment with general anesthesia I had to undergo for many years has left me exhausted for life. The sort of very profound short circuit at the sexual level that it's generated makes for sexuality to become something different from what it might seem to the rest of the people. The feeling that I share with many other intersex people is that someone who has been raped many times and who, moreover, has to deal with the experience of living in a culture where these kind of interventions are not considered to be nor rape nor mutilation, but a standard medical treatment. What is the price we have to pay in order to be a man or a woman? Certainly, our price is much higher. This is a picture of a painter that I like. It's called Sul Solar. He was a close friend of Jorge Luis Borges. So, every time we say, oh my God, what is it, a woman or a man? How weird he looks, how strange, I can define him. What we are doing is we are perpetuating the binomial system of sex and gender and probably doing violence to some other people that may be with you. So in order to produce changes in this kind of cultural function, is that we need to reconsider things about our own positions with respect to the body, sexuality, identity, gender expression, gender orientation, and to think what is that we demand to others to recognize them as a man or as a woman, or as objects of desire. this is something that hasn't been, except Ian Moreland, he had written about what can queer theory can do for intersex and the politics of touch. Nobody wrote about the erotics of intersex people. In general, it's only about the problem of intersexuality, no? But it would be nice, like in a future research, to write about all of the, not only art and different disciplines manifest intersex manifestation, but as well as an object of desire and as being able of. I don't know how to say it in English. Well, the erotics of intersex, actually. So, to end, our body is not a mere anatomical structure. It is as well cultural, symbolic, metaphoric, textual, and it contains all of its possible meanings and expressions. The body is not a formula to describe a fixed entity. It projects and it's projected, writes and it's written in a continuous agency, in a continuous action, always changing. The skin is not the limit. The body shapes society, and society also shapes the body. We all have scars. We have all been normalized in certain ways, more or less violently. Only understanding what happens to others also happens to us will allow us to exercise freedom in a way that is necessarily committed to the equal value of life, of bodily life. Not questioning values that we take for granted can make other lives very difficult and sometimes too often impossible. Gracias.